good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Hugh Chewerton. Your co-host today is Nixie Lamb. Nixie, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Today we're going to be talking about the budget for 2021. What did you think of the $120 billion of measures he announced yesterday? Handing out fewer sweeteners, offering up $5,000 worth of electronic spending vouchers, tax breaks of up to $10,000, along with a variety of other measures to help individuals and to help businesses as well. Announcing a record deficit of $257 billion this year, he warned that Hong Kong would suffer an annual deficit in the next few years in spending because of rising recurring expenses and one-off anti-epidemic measures. Well, what do you make of it all? Let us know your thoughts. You can leave a message on our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3. You can email backchat@rthk.hk. Or you can call us, and our telephone number is 233-88266, 233-88266. That is the same number to call if you want to speak to the Financial Secretary himself, Paul Chan, who will be with us between 8 and 9, so a little earlier than this, between 8 and 9 tomorrow morning in our studios here to listen to you and to answer your comments. Best thing to do is to call, and call early as well, and then you can get follow-up questions and comments and so on. We usually get a logjam at the end, so if you call at 8 o'clock, you can chat away to the financial secretary who's spending your money, making decisions about what to do with your cash. So take the opportunity. Tomorrow, 233-88266 is the number. That program will be presented with Peter Lewis as well from Money Talk and myself. Joining us now, between now and 9:30, we have David Webb in our central studio, shareholder activist, editor of website.com, and Michael Tin, who's a lawmaker with Roundtable. Others joining us later in the program as well. A couple of comments to kick us off. Maybe just one comment to kick us off. We'll get to the other emails in a moment. Andrew Kay, who hasn't written for a while, says, I listened to the budget press conference this afternoon. I've never heard such poor translation to English. I don't know why you bothered. Thank goodness for Channel News Asia. They give a sort of concise report in English. That's from Andrew Kay. Welcome back, Andrew. David Webb, good morning to you.
Morning.
What did you make of the budget?
It's disappointing. It's more of the same mishmash of nonsensical policies. They're throwing money around where they don't need to, and also going backwards in terms of tax reform. The 5K handout. If they're going to do a handout again to everybody, including rich people like me, then why don't they just use the same mechanism, which will cost less in terms of administration, and transfer the money to the bank accounts like they did last time? They've already got all the data on record. Instead, they want to somehow support the so-called electronic payments. Well, a transfer to my bank account is electronic, okay? Nobody walked the banknotes round and gave them to me. They didn't come in the mail. They transferred to my bank account. And if you contrived the scheme, and you can tell it was half-baked. He'd only just sort of put it in at the last minute because he said, we're in the process of identifying stored value providers, like Octopus, for example. And then we're going to figure out the details. Well, Octopus has never had a facility, as far as I know, to have restricted funds, coupons on its card. And so if they transfer $5,000 to my Octopus card, well, first of all, they have to raise the limit. Maybe they'll do it. That's why they're doing it in stages, because the limit's currently $3,000. But once they do that, I can transfer it straight into my bank account and achieve exactly what they would have done anyway.
You can transfer money from your Octopus to your bank account?
Sure. Yes, you can use an Octopus app. There's an app on your phone. You can move money in and out of your Octopus on your phone and into your app. And then out of your app, stored value app, which and into your bank account. They work two ways.
I think the amount of the $5,000 in on an installment of five installments in $1,000 each month.
Okay, well, I'll just that's fine.
Yeah, yes. And
but the idea that you can somehow restrict it is silly. I mean, even if it was on a sort of special purpose card that they invent for this purpose, you can only use it in Hong Kong, that still means that you can substitute other spending you would have done in the supermarket or whatever and spend spend the cash you've saved anywhere you like. You buy stuff on Amazon, or buy a few extra shares in the stock market, or whatever. So it's unlikely to have much trickle down effect into consumption. Of course, they could do it very narrowly, but then you're picking winners if you say it can only be used in restaurants. Mm-hmm. Again, it still substitutes for most people what they would have spent
in restaurants. How do you spend it outside Hong Kong? Because I think the idea is, first of all, that you've got to spend it.
Online payments.
Because all money is fungible, Hugh. So if you give me $5,000 and say, this is a voucher for one thing, that's something I no longer have to pay cash for, so I can use the cash for something else.
It's less fungible than cash.
Yes. Only just, and as I say, the Octopus card can't do vouchers. It just does cash, basically. It's accepted everywhere, or nearly everywhere, for small payments. I think they're going to, after this budget flourish, they're probably going to rethink that one. A stamp duty on stocks is a bad tax overall, because it doesn't tax any kind of gross domestic product, a profit or an earning. When an asset changes hands, the person who's selling it may well be making a loss, but there's still stamp duty payable. It was invented by the Dutch and brought over by King William and Queen Anne to finance a war in the 1600s, if I recall correctly. And it's been with us ever since. And the government is kind of addicted to it like crack cocaine. They reach for that when they can't think of anything else. The Stock Exchange didn't even know about it until it was announced. It really ought to be abolished rather than increased. You've got it on property as well, these various special stamp duty, double stamp duty, buyer's stamp duty, and so on. And it just slows down the economy, because estate agents can't move properties so fast. People who renovate properties for a living can't do that anymore because of the stamp duty being punitive.
Isn't it a very effective and, as you say, with a 500-year history of getting a little bit of money out of what you call rich people like you,
who get their money not from
wages, but from stocks. And
what they'll do is shift behaviour. It's true that some places have even higher stamp duty. The UK, for example, is an overall 0.5% rather than 0.26%. What happens then is that people start using derivatives. And in Hong Kong, there's no stamp duty on exchange-traded funds, warrants, bull bear certificates, futures contracts, and so on, some of which have much higher risk than stocks. So they're incentivizing people to switch over. And it reduces the volume of trading activity, as it does. If you imagine you have a 5% tax on stock transfers, there'd be almost no activity. And so at the margin, it starts to reduce the turnover, and that damages the business of brokers and so on. And it does, though, collect revenue from our compatriots in the mainland who deal quite vigorously on the Southbound Connect, and from overseas people who deal in a stock market. I think we ought to be working towards a purer, simpler tax system, which taxes profits and earnings and not the movement of assets. And cars as well. I mean, cars, they've increased the first registration tax by 30%. And that's a multiple, 1.3, by the way. So the lower band only goes up from, I think, 40 to 46%, but the higher band goes up to 138%. If you buy a $1 million luxury car, you'll now pay $1.088 million of tax on it. And you might still just park it in your garage and look at it lovingly, because you want to keep it as a low mileage vehicle. Mm-hmm. That's not going to solve transport congestion. They're still slow pedaling the idea of congestion pricing. The pilot scheme in Central has had a consultation 3 years ago, finished, and still no conclusions. They still haven't had the balls to actually do that. And if you want to reduce the number of people on a beach, you don't tax bathing suits. You tax the entrance to the beach. And that's what you should be doing with congestion, if that's your objective. Okay. And to have this envy tax on vehicles is just nonsensical.
All right, plenty of food for thought there. Michael Tin, good morning to you. Hello, Mr. Tin? Michael Tin? Hello? No, it's gone. Michael Tin? No.
Well,
all right. What about overall, of course, this is there's a big deficit. We're spending a lot more money. The government is spending a lot more money than it's getting in, and we'll continue to do that for the next 5 years. They say. What do you make of that?
Well, it's less than
they thought. You've often urged them to be a bit more generous, aren't they? Isn't that now? He is spending. He is opening up the coffers.
I've urged them also to cut the tax rates to make Hong Kong more attractive as a headquarters for multinationals and so on. You don't just when you talk in terms of returning the $1 trillion plus of surpluses that they've hoarded since the handover. Then you don't just need to just spray it around as they did with the employment support subsidy, $90 plus billion there, or building road bridges to Macau and so on. You could actually cut the tax rates to 10% across the board, and attract a whole lot of business from Singapore, because we're losing that battle at the moment for other reasons, like the NSL, for multinational headquarters. National security law, if you don't know what that stands for. And this is the voice of the BBC. You need to think of ways to attract business back to Hong Kong after the recent turmoil, and that would be one way to do it. Yeah. And not to engage in, you know, throwing the money around. They've already realised that the $2 fare scheme is going to be far more expensive than they thought it was. And so they're slow peddling the reduction of the age entitlement to 60. Mm. Other things they're doing is giving money to rich people by issuing silver bonds, which pay more interest than the market would, so that people with lots of cash can, when they reach the age of 60 now, not 65, can get some extra interest on their money. There's no good reason to do that. We're supposed to focus welfare on the poor and the needy, not on people who've got cash savings at hand.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope we've got Michael Tin now. Mr. Tin, good morning.
Yes. I'm here.
Thanks very much.
I've been here since the beginning of the program, so that's all right.
Okay. All right. sorry we missed you earlier. So you've heard David Webb's account. What do you make of the budget overall? What were the highlights for you?
Well, certainly not as articulate as Mr. Webb, but... Basically, the financial secretary had positively responded to my direct request to him for issuing consumption coupons. What I had told him earlier was that in this particular year, people were looking at how government can help the ones that suffered the most through the pandemic, okay, because we are looking at some light at the end of the tunnel due to the vaccine. Coming around, and also how to kickstart the economy rather than any kind of longer-term measures, okay? This is my feeling from talking to people on the street. So I had suggested to him that either you have another cash handout or you think about electronic consumption coupons. Previously, I had objected to consumption coupons that is issued on a paper basis because it's too much fraudulent possibility for fraud and counterfeit and all that, just hopeless. Now, with this particular thing, what I have asked him is, if you want to kickstart the economy, it has to be limited to a very short duration, maximum 2 months, okay? And there should be no restriction. Somebody can use it the whole amount in one go, all right? That's how you can kickstart the economy. Now, when I further look at the detail, it becomes $1,000 per month. If you use less than that, you can't get the money and roll over to the next month, all right? So basically, if you look at the food cost of an average person in Hong Kong over 30 days, all right, how many people do you think would spend money on food less than $30 a day? Probably none, right? So as far as I'm concerned, the way this is now orchestrated, it becomes a food allowance, a basic food allowance for everyone for 5 months, all right?
Yeah, it's as good as cash, isn't it, really? It just it allows them to buy the things they were going to buy anyway.
It does not restrict you on where to use that, I mean, other than paying rent or taxes and all that. I've checked with the government. You can use it at supermarket. So just think about it. You cannot use more than $1,000 a month, and it can be used in supermarket. So why would you spend it on anything else? So the ultimate beneficiary is against the one single sector that never really suffered through the pandemic, which is the supermarket. Now, so that is the irony of the situation. However, I still have to thank him for it, because a lot of people will benefit from this $5,000 basic food allowance. That is a huge relief to a lot of people, particularly when they slam the door on helping out the unemployed. Okay? Now, when it comes to helping the unemployed, they steadfastly refused my suggestion to come up with some kind of subsidy to help them on the basis that they have no way of scrutinizing and there's too much possibility of false claim and all that. But now with this loan, they still have to vet. Now, how are they going to vet? How would vetting a loan be different from vetting a direct subsidy? Now, I have no idea.
And will they actually come after people if they don't repay the loan?
What will they do if somebody default? They're talking about 6 months' salary to be repaid over 5 years. You think about a basic level worker, okay, and it's capped at 80,000. If it's capped at 80,000, you know most of the people are the grassroots. Imagine how can these people spare 1 month's salary every year for repayment? Basically, they use every single cent. They don't even save. So this is a this is an invitation for default.
They're just trying to do something to be seen to be doing something.
Why don't you just give them the money and forget it?
If you've run out of cash, you can apply for CSSA anyway. If you have no savings and you're unemployed, lost your job, you can apply for that.
What I worry about is what are the banks going to do when these people default? Do they go after them and make them declare bankruptcy before they can call on government for the loan guarantee?
I would imagine they wouldn't, but there's an incentive, isn't there? Because it's interest free if you make the payments.
But the real point is that the government, through force of law, has put people out of work. People who are, for example, swimming pool attendants. There are no pools open still. Beach attendants. No beaches are open still. The government has ordered them to stop work. If they can't find other work, the government should compensate them fairly for that reason alone.
On a direct subsidy, why loan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, whether or not they've still got savings, they've been deprived of their livelihood by force of law.
Okay, our number is 233-88266. I hope we got a caller on the line now. Guy, I think. Guy, good morning.
Yes, good morning all, especially to David. It's very good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Sound very well. A question for David. I'm looking at the budget summary produced by the government, and I think you've just spoken about it, relieving traffic congestion is the headline. So they're increasing first registration tax for private cars by 15%, which is not nearly enough. And they're increasing the license fee by 30%. Now, why on earth are they doing this if their objective is to relieve traffic congestion? I firmly believe that one individual can only drive one private car at a time, and there is no need for that individual to own more than one private car. So that should be ruled out in future. And a better way, perhaps, of fairly reducing traffic congestion would to increase the fuel price. Then people would use their cars more carefully and only for essential journeys if they felt that it was getting too expensive. Perhaps also private cars should be restricted in engine size. We're trying to convert everybody to green car, electric vehicles. If you increased, you went the fuel route, of course, the electric vehicles are not going to be paying for petrol. So that's an encouragement. And if you ban the sale of private cars over, say, 4 litres, that would be a big, that would be a start. I value your views on this.
Well, the in a free market, you should probably be allowed to drive a 10-litre car if you want and pay the extra fuel tax. You've suggested the higher tax on fuel, but that doesn't directly address congestion because most of the time on most of the roads, there isn't congestion. So it will be much better to implement what has been proposed for over 30 years now, which is a congestion pricing scheme at peak times in well, congested areas. Yeah. You would have to pay a toll to enter that area. You know, that would be based on demand, basically, to price it so that the roads are not
I totally agree with that. Up. I remember it was Scott in the 70s, I think, or 80s, who first proposed that. It's completely ridiculous that we don't have it by now.
Yes.
Singapore has had it now for, 25 years?
Yep, 30? And many cities have done that, and it works, basically. Yep, I mean, so you can still have, you can still own a collection of luxury cars, sports cars or whatever, because that's your thing. You might collect model train sets or luxury cars. But, you know, if you're going to take them onto the roads in the middle of the day in Central, you're going to have to pay a toll, and it'll be...
If I may come in on this one, first of all, let's separate the two. If they want to increase the first registration tax, they don't need to bring up the issue of congestion, okay? Because since 2011, that rate has not been touched. So they're saying that, well, it's only inflation, but this is a rate. The car prices are going up, so you don't change the rate all the time, all right? Now, when it comes to congestion, I totally agree. I think we're talking about Alan Scott, who used to be the Secretary of Transport, whom I remember many years ago when I was still a kid, pushing for ERP, electronic road pricing. And then for some reason, they dropped it, and the government, the previous administrations has been looking at it, and so far nothing has been done. You don't give up anything like that in Core Central. And the drivers driving the... tire tires and all that just keep going around and around and, you know, congesting the road.
Do you know the reason why they dropped it?
Well, one thing with the bypass, wasn't the central...
Well, what is the reason they dropped it? Please enlighten me.
I don't know. One reason that was given for many years was the central bypass. So we can't consider it until there's a central bypass because people going east-west on Hong Kong Island.
Yeah, it's done.
It's done now. Yeah, I agree.
The other spurious reason was privacy, everyone, the government can see where you're going anyway.
Singapore doesn't worry about privacy. None of the other jurisdictions worry about privacy. This is something that should have been done. I totally agree. The car registration tax is useless. They have to target the usage, not the ownership.
The government can see where you are at all times anyway. They can track mobile phones. They have location devices. They've got face recognitions on CCTV.
Michael Tien, Guy, many thanks for your call. Once again, our number is 233-88266. You're welcome, of course, to put that point to the financial secretary tomorrow as well, between 8 and 9. Michael Tien, what about the issue of stamp duty, increasing the stamp duty? What do you make of that? Do you support that?
Over the years, they have adjusted that. It started, I think, a bit higher, a lot higher, and then came down, and then whatever. Now, this is a very interesting thing. Government collect their revenues from many sources, all right? And financial sector shares, all right, has always been the main source of revenue for Hong Kong, and that's what Hong Kong is famous for, right? Our stock exchange, all right, the billions and trillions and whatever. Now they are trying to take something out of this goose that laid the golden egg. Now, 0.3 seems nothing, but it's 30% increase. And then they say, well, it only affects people who buy shares and whatnot. But I don't know. A lot of people do that. I just worry that the big players thinking about a 30% cost increase would shift to doing a lot more on the derivatives, which is the higher risk products, and those are not carrying any stamp duty. Now, this is what I worry about, and I don't know whether eventually that will happen. That is actually not, in my mind, leading to a more positive direction for the stock exchange.
It's also a worrying thing that once you do that, and after not touching it since 1993,
right, then
28 years, then you're going to start
using it.
Yeah, you're going to start doing it again and again. You go, okay, well, if they didn't
right.
mind that, we'll
so
make
what's
it...
What's wrong with 0.16? What's
yes,
wrong
or...
with 0.19, right?
Right.
Every
right.
time it's, what is it, a billion, 10 billion?
Yes.
Yeah, 10 billion every time.
Every bit is a $10 billion win for the house, the casino, as it were.
Yeah, I hate touching rates. I've been pushing the financial secretary introducing new taxes to broaden our tax base. We have the narrowest tax base in the world.
Oh, no, that's not true, Michael. It's just that there's lots of poor people who can't afford to pay tax. You know, we do have a...
No, that's the whole point.
It's not... Salaries tax isn't narrow. It applies to anybody
exactly,
who earns enough.
Exactly. They have to think about taxes that get the other part of the citizens into the tax net.
Why should we? They're poor. Why should we make them pay tax when we're basically giving it back to them in welfare anyway?
The ones that I propose to government to pay taxes are the ones that own assets. The rich ones.
Okay.
I'm talking about regressive.
They pay rates.
Hang on, David. Another argument for another day, because we've got a break right. for the news now at 9. And say goodbye for the moment to Michael Tin. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, Roundtable Lawmaker. Kenneth Lung will be joining us after the news at 9, and David Webb sticking around. The weather, mainly cloudy, a few rain patches around at first. 19 degrees at the moment. Relative humidity is at 90%. Don't forget, phone in with the Chief, with the Financial Secretary tomorrow between 8 and 9. Welcome back. This is Back Chat on a Thursday morning. Tomorrow morning between 8 and 9, we're going to be having our phone-in special with the Financial Secretary, Paul Chan. It's your chance to put your questions and your comments to him, and he will have no choice but to listen to you. That'll be between 8 and 9 tomorrow. All you've got to do is pick up the phone and call 233-88-266, and say we'll give you the chance to talk to him and to Hong Kong. That'll be between 8 and 9, then we'll have a shortened back chat between 9 and 9:30. So that's all coming up tomorrow. For today, we're looking at thinking about yesterday's budget. We have in our central studio David Webb, a shareholder activist, editor of website.com. We're talking to Michael Tin in the first part of the program. We're now joined by Kenneth Lung, who's a former accountancy sector lawmaker. Once again, we welcome your comments on email, backchat@rthk.hk, on our Facebook page, or on the phone, 233-88266 is the number. Let's start off with an interesting email from Mary. This is a little bit hard to communicate on the radio, and some of the detail I kind of have to summarise, but it's an interesting point. Mary has a series basically of news reports from yesterday. 24th of February 2021, Hong Kong, 1,500 homeless street sleepers recorded in 20. Inability to pay rent attributed as main cause. 24th of February 2021, at about 5 o'clock this afternoon, a woman named Kwok, 47-year-old, fell from the top of an apartment at 297 Nau Tau Kok Road and was seriously injured. 24th of February 2021, at around 9 a.m. yet today, a Hong Kong Post employee jumped off the top of the building of 1 Wang Ching Street, Kowloon Bay. 24th of February, at around 8:35 this morning, the police received a report that someone was suspected of falling into the sea at the Kwun Tong Public Pier. 24th of February, a woman fell to death in Tai Po. At 7:05 this morning, security guard at Riviera Lodge spotted a woman lying on the platform. 24th of February at 0:32 a.m. today, a man surnamed Lung fell from the top of the Golden Bear Industrial Center. 24th of February, a man, 23 years old, reported about 10 p.m. last night that his girlfriend, surnamed Chung, 21 years old, hanged herself using a cotton rope. And we have a financial secretary whose solution to the plight of those whose livelihood has been severely impacted in the past year is to promise $5,000 in e-vouchers to all residents, some of whom do not have access to a mobile phone, while ring-fencing billions for the Lantau money pit, undisclosed costs of implementing NSL, and additional ammo for the security services. No wonder they don't want fair elections. That comes from Mary.
Some other emails. John says, good morning. On today's show, I'm sure you'll talk about the government's decision to increase the stamp duty from 0.1 to 0.13%. I would argue that this move makes sense for a number of reasons. A, faced with looming budget deficits, the government needs to lift revenues. Potential new sources of revenue, such as a retail sales tax, are clearly non-starters, given the weak Hong Kong economy. The local stock market, however, has been booming, fueled by a surge in southbound fund flows. Given Fed Chairman Powell's commitment to maintain low interest rates, the strength of the Chinese economy and the concurrent exodus of US-listed China companies to Hong Kong Stock Exchange, the Hong Kong stock market should continue to do well. One could argue, therefore, that this is an opportune time to hike the stamp duty. B, while the proposed change in stamp duty represents a 30% increase, the absolute increment is small at $300 for each $1 million trade. C, for local investors, let's not overlook the fact that, unlike most overseas investors, we pay zero tax on capital gains from stock trading and zero tax on dividend income from listed companies. So an additional 0.03% is not going to make much difference for Hong Kong investors and punters. That is from John. We've got a lot of other interesting emails. Maybe we'll get to those in a moment. But Mr. Leung, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk about the stamp duty. John is saying, well, there's all this money coming in, all this southbound money, and now is a chance to get some of that money, and better to get it from them.
You have two ways of getting money: either increase the transaction, the volume of trading, or you increase the stamp duty rate. And perhaps, I mean, we have a lot of, you know, small traders and small investors. I think the increase is just a very bad move. Of course, when you talk about $1 million, you're paying $300 more. But I do think that you should aim at increasing the volume traded on the stock exchange rather than increasing the stamp duty. I objected to any change in the tax band or the tax rate in a very difficult year. It just sends down the wrong message. I don't think we lack money at the moment. The estimated reserves would stand at $900 billion by 31st of March. By any standard, it's a very large amount of reserve. I don't think the government has done enough to alleviate the burden of the working class and the middle class. But really, by raising 0.03% of stamp duty, I don't think it's a good gesture. It doesn't send out a good message, and it doesn't, you know, look good.
But the volume is not a problem, is it? There's plenty of business being done on the stock exchange now.
One more. I mean, there are plenty. If we just leave the stamp duty alone at 0.1%, then why should we change it? Because the volume will increase naturally. Because in total, we'll have increased stamp revenue if we do better. And in encouraging more, you know, different types of products to be listed on the exchange. And that is a natural process. You don't need to move the stamp duty rate, because this is just a really bad gesture and creates some, you know, psychological barrier for small investors.
Yeah, if you keep doing it, at some point you do reduce the revenue. There's a point at which the volume, yeah, the reduction in volume more than offsets the increase in the rate. And you can do a thought experiment. If you had a 10% rate of stock transfer duty, there would be almost no transfers and no revenue. So I'm not saying that's going to happen at 0.13, but there's already going to be some diminishing effect on volume and shifting to derivatives and products like contracts for differences, which is where you pay the difference in the movement of the stock price in a financial bet rather than own the stock itself. And don't forget, of course, people can buy some of these stocks overseas. You can open a brokerage account with an international broker in Hong Kong and buy HSBC in New York on the NYSE. And they have zero stamp duty there. So your transaction costs will be lower. Mm. If you want to own HSBC, you can still do that by owning it through an online broker in New York. There were some other financial gimmicks in the budget, more green bond talk. I'm getting confused with all these colours. We've got green, we've got silver. I'm not sure when we're going to get yellow. Yellow bonds might be fun, the money is all fungible. Again, the government raises money through so-called green bonds and says, "Aren't we green?" But then they've got a huge pot of money that Kenneth referred to, over a trillion when you count the exchange fund surplus. And it all goes into there. And if they allocate some projects that involve landscape gardening and say that's green, or some projects that are going to reduce our carbon footprint, say, well, we'll put that money there. Then that just frees up money that they can spend building more roads and tunnels and bridges to places, like the we're going to need some bridges to the Lantau Metropolis if they build it, and putting concrete into the Lochmarchal loop. And there was more talk about science parks and cyber ports and general sort of government pushing innovation and technology. If you count the words in the budget, INT comes up a lot. This year there's almost no Belt and Road, just one paragraph, because that's kind of old hat. Now, there's a lot more...
About the Greater Bay?
There was more GBA.
A lot of Greater Bay, yes, indeed, yes.
And more dual circulation. I mean, there's, you know, they're using the same words as their compatriots up north. You don't actually need to spend public money on things that are beneficial to Hong Kong anyway. They will happen, right? You know, if we're good at something, we'll do it. We're an entrepreneurial, and we were a free market. An entrepreneurial economy. But on the other hand, if you take taxpayers' money and try and force people, take money out of people's hands and then use it to do favourite sector things, then that's distorting the economy. And it produces a suboptimal result. Also, there's a subsidy for people, property tycoons, who want to list their buildings as real estate investment trusts or REITs. For some strange reason, they came up with this. The government's going to pay $8 million Hong Kong dollars of costs for anyone who wants to start a REIT. There's only about a dozen of these things created by people like Li Ka-shing and Li Xiaoqi through their companies. And they want to have more of those. They want to subsidize people to issue bonds. Why do that? I mean, if it's in their interest to issue a bond, they will do so.
Kenneth Leung, what do you make of the sweeteners? We've talked quite a lot about the vouchers. There's also the tax breaks, which is sort of scaled back from last year, and also the interest-free loan. What do you make of those?
Well, I think it's just too little too late. For example, if you talk about the loan, how long will it take for one to apply for the loan? And we would have expected something similar to last year, because if you look at the deficit, the scale of the deficit this year is not as large as it had been predicted. And certainly middle-class people are not happy. The working class are not happy because they have lost their job. And why would they need to apply for $80,000 of loan, and knowing that they need to repay them, and without any prospect of any job in the next few months? I mean, how would they dare to apply for loan? Of course, there is the 100% guarantee, but I think some sort of subsidies to the people, unemployed people, would be a better option. I don't say that it's totally, useless, the loan, but of course you need more weapons in the war chest
more immediate
to alleviate, the people's, the plight.
If the banks participate, they're going to have to be subsidized as well, because the cost of administering and vetting someone for an $80,000 loan is more than they're only going to get $800 a year.
The loan amount, $8,000, would go into the banking fees, I think.
Yeah.
$80,000 is a good chunk of money, though, isn't it, for grassroots people? That there is that advantage. You can make a substantial amount.
But if you know that you are not going to get any job in the next 6 months, and of course people default, and of course the people government said you there's 100% guarantee, it doesn't look good, because the bank will have taken up the liability, the balance sheet, and they have to write off all these. And I think the government should directly give subsidy to the unemployed people. There's a lot of demand by various political parties to set up such a mechanism. But of course, the secretary, Lord Chee Kong, said, if we have to set up such a mechanism, that will take years. But I don't see why.
Well, it's a question of fairness as well. If you're a bartender, I mentioned two other professions earlier, but if you're a bartender, you're still out of work because bars are still closed. So shouldn't you be suing the government for putting you out of work, and if you own the bar, suing them for putting you out of business?
For these businesses, which have been, under a very strict lockdown rules, the government should give them subsidies, because this is really, they cannot, survive for another 2 or 3 months without any incremental. Mm. Bartender, yes, it's one of those. The swimming coaches and various people on working on freelance basis because of the social distancing, they could not get work.
Yeah, and when tennis coaches had a sort of demonstration in the park the other day, the police came round in their hundreds to stop them. But they have a valid point. Why can't they? And now only just last week they've allowed tennis to resume. But there's been so much disruption and for so little return as well as a result of these.
I think the company
measures.
Should think very hard what kind of venue they should reopen, because you know that they are easing down the dining in arrangement in restaurants. They should think about outdoor, indoor venues where people can relax, do their sports, and the coaches can get back to their normal daily work. It is very important, I think.
Okay. Some emails. Mike is sort of echoing some of those points. With the subject line vouchers, Mike says, let me get this straight. Government is going to spend $600 million distributing what amounts to 1 month's grocery money spread out over a 5 month period in the way of vouchers. Many or most have been hurting financially due in most part to the government orchestrated shutdowns more than the dreaded COVID for over a year. Needing help months ago, we are going to get that help needed 5 months from now. Whoever dreamed this up, this help package, is either living under a rock or in some ivory palace somewhere. We peasant masses...
Or in a luxury government house in Shuson Hill.
We peasant masses should feel grateful for the crumbs from the bread that we cooked that falls from the table of the powerful. But it is too little too late. If your financial help plan was a fraction of what your aggressive COVID prevention plan was, we would all be getting somewhere in the neighbourhood of 6 months' rent, waived government fees or rates or late charge penalties. That would look more like a benevolent government than this. That is from Mike. Jay says the poor need coupons that you can pay your electricity bill, pay your water bill, pay your internet, pay credit card. When it comes to your food, the big supermarkets exploiting people. Supermarkets never gave money back to the low class people. Loans, you can't get blood out of a stone. S says, regarding the congestion charge, if we look at the major road layout and thoroughfares of Hong Kong, we see that it's mostly east to west. So if there is a congestion charge for going into central, will it mean that other roads, for example, Kane Road or Robinson Road near central, will be congested to bypass the central district? That's why they built the bypass, I think, S. I think that was what happened there. Okay, on Facebook, Horatio says, what do I think? I applaud the FS's sense of humour because it's literally a joke. Lending to people who lost their jobs at 1%, when the government's inept policy was the culprit. NSL provision. If I only need to produce a piece of homework once a year, I would at least have the dignity to show something valuable, meaningful, and creative. And speaking of creative, green bonds, tell me one thing that is green about Hong Kong under this government. Sam says the stock stamp duty increase caused a slide in the stock market yesterday. Don't think that non-stock buyers will be affected. Look at your MPF account. I lost tens of thousands of dollars in one day. China doubled the same stamp duty in 2015. It was then followed by a stock crash. The two may not be related, but you know what? The stamp duty collected from the stock market on the same year fell drastically too. The majority of practitioners in the stock market are against the initiative. Why did Mr. Chan still act against people's will again?
Well, it still has to get approval of LegCo, by the way, which is why it's not happening till August. And since LegCo is now run by pro-government legislators, it will be interesting to see whether they approve it. Including the financial services legislator, Christopher Chung, who's obviously against it, because there are other legislators there who don't like things like the increase in first registration tax in the transport sector legislator. So they might help each other, and in the way that functional constituencies do, sort of trade off.
I think it's much, wishful thinking how the pro-establishment legislators, joining hands, to oppose some
yes.
government items. But I don't think it will happen.
By the way, if the government's looking at its own stock portfolio, which they own through the exchange fund, then that went down yesterday. And let's not forget that they own 6% of HKX. So the value of their stake in HKX went down about $4 billion yesterday. There's that.
Okay. John on Facebook says, question for Paul Chan, what will the $8 billion money for national security be spent on? Why is funding for public broadcaster RTHK cut by 4.6%?
TC has a couple of messages. He says the logic behind the $5,000 spending voucher is interesting, especially compared to that of the $10,000 cash handout last year. I do want to hear what the current members of the provisional LegCo have to say about it. Full disclosure, I'm eligible for the voucher along with the $80,000 interest-free loan because I don't have a job in Hong Kong. TC says the Hong Kong SAR government seems to be philosophically against handing out money and provides a laundry list of excuses for doing it, such as not targeted enough to cause inflation. Worst, mainstream political parties on both sides of the aisle are also against universal cash handouts and thereby allowing the government to continue this philosophical opposition. I think TC is in Canada. CW says it sounds like the 10,000 plus refugees that Hong Kong has, and some of whom have been in Hong Kong for 10 plus years, will not be entitled to the $5,000 vouchers as they're not permanent residents and they're also not allowed to work. Why not do something for this group?
Well, strangely, they said and for new arrivals, and I was thinking, how do you define that? I mean, does that include asylum seekers? Does it include foreign domestic helpers? What exactly do they mean, or do they just mean only people from the mainland who've recently arrived? It's not at all clear yet.
No, maybe all people legally arrived in Hong Kong. That is the main message, I guess.
Mm. Well, they did. Asylum seekers usually arrive on a visa and then seek asylum. That's legally arrived, and they have a legal process through which they're going.
They're not in Hong Kong, though, are they? In the same way that domestic helpers are.
Yes, they're living in Mong Kok and places like that, and they don't like coming out for COVID tests. Okay. So, sometimes.
A lot more emails. Jay says fuel tax will just get passed on to the customer or written off in company expenses, and we know chauffeurs drive around the block. Jim says, what is the actual topic? Does the 17th century British financial model matter to me in a 21st century Hong Kong? What does the wealth of Mr. Webb matter to your listening audience? Comes from Jim. Magnus says, good morning. A pathetic budget from a pathetic government. Leaving aside Hong Kong's other issues for the moment, COVID has impacted Hong Kong economically in a very non-uniform manner. Most of business has been largely unaffected, some even prospering, while for a small number of sectors, particularly hospitality, it has been and continues to be an absolute disaster. What's needed from the government is A, stop prolonging the misery through your inept and incoherent restrictive measures, which merely serve to displace transmission rather than restrict it, thereby unnecessarily dragging out each outbreak. Other countries, for example, Vietnam, Australia, and so on, take weeks to contain an outbreak where Hong Kong takes months. This is because they do it properly, where our restrictions have enormous holes in them. B, properly compensate those small number of sectors who are severely affected. Stop spraying money where it's not needed. The levels of compensation provided thus far are derisory. That is from Magnus. Mr. Pink says, on the subject of stamp duty and turnover on the local stock exchange, here is an interesting statistic to chew on. When I came to Hong Kong in 1986, the average daily turnover, or ADT, on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange was under $500 million. Yesterday, this figure hit $324 billion, i.e. an increase of 624 times. Food for thought. The trend is irreversible and won't be derailed by a higher stamp duty. That is from Mr. Pink. Jay says many people would like an $80,000 loan to offload their 24% credit card fees and bad luck. CW says, why not impose an annual tax on the taxi license owners? The taxi license owners seem like they are a protected species. That's CW. Jim says, I agree with Mary that the Hong Kong SAR government, similar to other governments, missed the mark when considering the needy public and how not being a financial activist are affected by being poor. That's from Jim. And Anthony says, an increase in stamp duty is an encouraging signal to raise money from assets. However, where are the policies for housing in the budget? Until the Hong Kong government deals with the most basic of human needs, a roof over one's head, how does the financial secretary expect to develop a healthy, functioning and forward-looking society in the future? The 2019 protests and Occupy Central movement are warning signals that seem to have fallen on deaf ears again in this year's budget. Paul Chan and Carrie Lam need to deliver a better future that includes the affordable and livable home, not a 200-square-foot unaffordable Sun and K shoebox for our young families if Hong Kong is to flourish.
That is from Anthony. Thanks very much indeed for all those messages. Backchat at rthk.hk. Kenneth Leung, I mean, sorry, I've been sort of answering you specific questions, but, you know, overall, what did you make of the budget? What did you think of this?
I think, of course, I mean, you hear about the criticism, but I must say there are some stuff in the budget which I like. But, of course, I mean, these are not the stuff which a lot of people will be concerned about. I mean, there are a lot of mentioning about, you know, improving the air quality, the seaside promenade, and also the use of renewable energy, and more money will be put aside to make the living environment, you know, our living environment better. But, of course, this is a long-term thing because people will care more about the immediate future. You know, do we have money for food and lodging for the next few months? But these are the long-term visions which I think he's doing right. But how is he going to implement that? Will the next government try to implement all these policies? The next thing I would like to mention is about the financial services. There are some new ideas about creating a regime for offshore funds to re-domicile in Hong Kong. The tax concessions for the family offices, these are the right thing that could be pushed forward. But overall, I think people are more concerned about their livelihood. You know, how do I feed my children in the next few weeks or so? That is the main point that the financial secretary should address. And also, I do think he should think hard about, you know, increasing stamp duty. I mean, I don't think it's a good move at all.
So for the coupon thing, a lot of people are saying, well, it takes too long. It can only come in during summertime. It's like 3-4 months after that. And it cannot pay for rent and stuff like that. Should the government change about that point?
Well, I think in a way, they want to create some basic infrastructure whereby they can use electronic consumption voucher in future. But apart from this 5,000, why don't you give everybody another 5,000 cash? Because you have got the infrastructure to distribute the cash last year.
But the timing, think about the timing, Kenneth. You see, if you did it cash, you could do it this month or next month.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, if you do 5,000... If you do vouchers,
then you're closer to the next LegCo election period, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you do both things because they want to create infrastructure.
from the government's point of view, don't you want to make people feel better about the government by the time of the next LegCo? So you hold the vouchers back.
Well, if they do both, they can have a long-term sustainable effect for 10 months. Yeah.
So it sort of looks like the government trying to achieve multiple purpose, but then sort of stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
It cannot.
We look on salaries tax. Since they've been repeatedly waiving salaries tax 100% of the first 10,000 and so on, mm-hmm. why not just abolish the lower bands which produce that revenue? Bands 2%, 6%, and 10% produce $9,000 of salaries tax. And they're going to say you don't have to pay the first 10,000. So we could take the opportunity to just abolish those bands and introduce a flat rate of tax, and then we can discuss in future what that rate should be, because it certainly could be.
Be a future project. I think it's not a wise move to just, you know.
You don't need banding, because instead they're going the other way.
Now.
instead of.
I agree. It's a simpler tax system. Equitable tax system is what we need.
And they should tax housing allowances, of course, properly, because that's always been a loophole. And then you've got a nice, simple, flat rate of tax, including all of your benefits, and the same rate of flat tax on profits, no gimmicks like half rates on the first 2 million. Just make it simple and stop messing around with the system. And that, you know, if we have a root and branch review of the tax system, I think we'll be in a better place 5 years from now. But no financial secretary in the last 20 years has been willing to do that.
Okay. Well, Kenneth Leung, many thanks for joining us today. Former accountancy sector lawmaker. And David Webb, thank you very much indeed. Good to see you. Editor of website.com, shareholder activist. One more time, between 8 and 9 tomorrow. the Financial Secretary, Paul Chan, will be with us here in the studio. I think we'll be on Facebook Live and on TV as well, with Peter Lewis as a co-host, putting your questions to the Financial Secretary, and you can do that by calling us on the usual number, 233-88266, which that's between 8 and 9 tomorrow. Many thanks to Nixie Lam, leaving you now with the latest weather. It's going to be mainly cloudy, a few rain patches around at first, some sunny intervals during the day, and it's going to be warm. Maximum temperature up to about 24 degrees, the outlook warm during the day. Visibility relatively low with a few rain patches tomorrow. 19 degrees now, relative humidity right up at 90%.